This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
You know, when you think about the global artificial intelligence race, the image that usually comes to mind is like a handful of rival tech companies just trying to build smarter software, right?
Yeah, totally. The conversation almost always defaults to that software duel narrative. Like two sides locked in a room, racing to write the most elegant code.
You picture these exhausted engineers staying up all night tweaking algorithms, all just atop some, I don't know, obscure leaderboard with a new chatbot or image generator. But the reality on the ground is it's starting to look completely different.
It really is. I mean, expanding the scope like that, it completely changes how you interpret the daily headlines. A lot of people are missing this broader geopolitical architecture because they're hyper-focused on, like, whether one AI model can pass a bar exam slightly better than another.
Exactly. Imagine we've been watching a drag race, right? And we're obsessing over who has the faster engine. But meanwhile, one of the competitors is quietly paving new roads, building gas stations, rewriting the traffic laws, and like buying up the insurance companies all at the same time.
Right. They're just building an app. They're building a massive interconnected machine made of software, microchips, telecom networks, diplomatic treaties. It's all moving as one cohesive unit.
And that sets up our mission for this deep dive perfectly. Today, we are unpacking a highly detailed July 2026 briefing and commentary provided by lawyer Kim Kyung-jin, a former National Assemblyman.
And just for the listeners' clarity as we navigate this, we'll be referring to him simply as lawyer Kim Kyung-jin throughout our discussion today, drawing strictly from his independent analysis.
We are going to explore how China's AI strategy has drastically shifted away from like a simple software competition with the US, morphing into this full-stack infrastructure ecosystem.
The real value of lawyer Kim Kyung-jin's briefing is how it pieces together these seemingly disparate events from just the last few weeks of July.
Yeah, because we're looking at IPOs, product launches, international declarations.
Exactly. In isolation, they just read like standard tech industry press releases.
Yeah.
But put them on the same board, and they form a very deliberate, unified strategy that's reacting to and attempting to bypass U.S. pressure.
So let's start on the software front line, because the tactical playbook there has completely flipped. The briefing highlights that on July 27th, Moonshot AI released the full weights for its Kimi K3 model.
And to be clear, this model is a behemoth.
It really is. Let's break that jargon down for you, the listener. It boasts 2.8 trillion parameters and a 1 million token context window.
Right. And parameters are essentially the artificial synapses of the model, the connections that determine how it thinks. 2.8 trillion is an astronomical number.
Yeah, and that 1 million token context window means the AI's short-term memory can process the equivalent of like several thick novels in a single prompt. It's a highly capable system.
The technical specs are definitely impressive, but the delivery method is the actual story here. Moonshot AI didn't just put this massive brain behind an API paywall.
No, they didn't.
They offered the model weights, the development tools, and the deployment rights outright.
Okay, let me try an analogy here to make sure I'm grasping the magnitude of this. An API model, like what we typically see dominating the US market, is like renting a room in a highly secure hotel, right? You pay a fee, you go in, you ask a question, you get an answer.
Right, but you can't touch the plumbing or look at the building's blueprints.
Exactly. But by giving away the weights, Moonshot AI is essentially handing over the complete architectural blueprints, the raw materials, and the legal right to build a replica of their hotel on your own property.
That is the exact dynamic. Providing the weights gives companies around the world a cheaper, fundamentally less controlled option.
Which means they can run it on their own servers.
Yep. They can modify the code and keep their proprietary data in-house without ever sending it back to a US server.
But the underlying strategic play here is super aggressive.
How so?
Well, Moonshot AI is deprioritizing immediate, predictable API revenue in order to embed Chinese AI architecture into global enterprise systems as fast as humanly possible. Ah, because they are acutely aware of the regulatory clock ticking in the background. I mean, the U.S. sanctions are expanding far beyond just stopping physical hardware shipments.
Exactly. The new frontier of sanctions targets the software itself. The U.S. is actively looking at how to restrict access to model weights and clamp down on something called model distillation.
I've seen that term model distillation floating around in regulatory debates, but I'll admit the mechanics of it confuse me a bit. How does a company distill an AI?
Think of distillation like a world-renowned master chef training a novice line cook.
Okay.
Training a massive AI from scratch requires billions of dollars and months of computing time. But once you have that genius master model, you could use it to generate highly structured synthetic training data to teach a much smaller, cheaper model.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You literally distill the vast knowledge of the large model into a compact, highly efficient, smaller model that can run on like a laptop or a smartphone.
Wait, so if a foreign company gets access to the master model, even temporarily, they can siphon off its intelligence to build their own local versions without needing massive supercomputers?
Precisely, which is why the U.S. wants to restrict access. By pushing Kimi K3 out as an open-weight model now, China is flooding the zone.
They're getting ahead of the bands.
Exactly. They're intentionally creating a scenario where their architecture is already woven into global supply chains, enterprise software, and independent distillation pipelines before any new legal frameworks can be finalized to block them.
I mean, that strategy sounds brilliant on paper, but it takes a massive financial toll on the companies actually doing it. If Moonshot is just giving away the blueprints, how do these Chinese AI firms survive the political and financial realities?
It's incredibly tough.
Yeah, the briefing points to another major player, DeepSeek, which just paused its Series 2 funding. And lawyer Kim King-jin makes a very specific point that this is not a traditional cash flow issue or a failure of their tech.
Right, the DeepSeek funding pause serves as this harsh reality check on the current geopolitical climate. Their valuation and capital raising basically hit a brick wall directly because of viral comments made by the founder and the overarching U.S.-China political friction.
Wow. So the environment has shifted so radically that geopolitical risk is now like a mathematical variable directly dragging down enterprise valuation.
It fundamentally changes what it means to run a tech company right now. Having the smartest engineers in the room is no longer enough to guarantee success.
No, definitely not.
The job description for an AI CEO in China today requires managing regulatory defense, navigating highly volatile geopolitical headwinds, and securing a viable, state-approved path to an IPO.
All while fighting a shadow war just to physically acquire Microchip.
Exactly. You simply cannot separate the software development from the political reality anymore.
And giving away that software is a bold, strategic move, but it completely falls apart if the people downloading your blueprints don't have the physical machines powerful enough to run them.
That's the catch.
Right. You can't run a 2.8 trillion parameter model on a standard office server.
Mm.
You need serious hardware. And we know U.S. sanctions have aggressively targeted China's ability to import the absolute fastest, most cutting-edge individual chips.
The physical hardware bottleneck is arguably the single biggest vulnerability in China's AI ecosystem right now.
So what's their workaround?
Their workaround is to change the architectural rules of the game. If you can't procure the single most powerful bleeding-edge chip, you compensate by relying on sheer scale, novel architecture, and mass deployment capabilities.
And we saw this executed at the World Artificial Intelligence Conference, or WAIC, on July 17th when Huawei revealed the Ascend 950 SuperPod, right?
We did, yeah.
The SuperPod. The name alone sounds like a piece of sci-fi infrastructure. Break down the engineering reality of what Huawei actually put on that stage.
So it's a massive computing cluster comprising 24 individual accelerator cards. But the secret sauce isn't just the sheer number of chips, it is the network binding them together.
Okay, how does that work?
Yeah. Huawei implemented an incredibly high bandwidth, low latency network utilizing a unified memory address system. Huawei is stepping onto the stage acknowledging, hey, we might not be an NVIDIA flagship chip in a one-on-one benchmark fight, but we're offering a cohesive, massive scale alternative.
Wait, let me pause on that unified memory address system because I think that's the key to understanding this workaround. For those of us who aren't hardware engineers, if you just wire 1,000 standard chips together, they usually have to stop, translate, and pass data back and forth to each other constantly, right?
Right, which creates a massive data traffic jam.
But unified memory system means they aren't passing notes anymore. They're all reading from the exact same giant whiteboard simultaneously.
Exactly. That completely eliminates the communication bottleneck. Going back to your earlier analogy, if they can't get the single fastest sports car engine on the market, they are engineering a flawless harness to link 1,024 pickup trucks together so perfectly that they can pull the exact same weight at the exact same speed.
That's a great way to look at it. But the GPUs or the pickup trucks pulling the load, they're only half the hardware equation. They need memory to function the short-term workspace where the AI holds the data it's actively processing.
Right, and the briefing points out a massive, highly calculated move in this space. On July 27th, CXMT, which is China's leader in DRAM memory, debuted on the tech board.
And the stock surged over 465%, hitting a market cap of over 3.31 trillion yuan. I mean, that is a mind-bending amount of capital mobilization.
It really is. DRAM is often treated as like the unglamorous cousin to the GPU, but it is the absolute lifeblood of an AI server. A massive AI model will stall instantly without vast amounts of high-speed memory feeding it data.
So that astronomical stock surge for CXMT illustrates the sheer force of state-directed domestic capital.
Exactly. China is actively aligning its chip design, its domestic production lines, and its capital markets to guarantee total self-sufficiency in AI memory.
When state capital flows in like that, it's not just speculation, it's a very clear signal. But DRAM is a deeply integrated global market. If you're sitting in a neighboring tech hub like South Korea, which dominates global memory sales, and China suddenly becomes entirely self-sufficient, what does the fallout look like on the ground?
Well, lawyer Kim Kung-jin provides a very sharp analysis of that exact scenario. The immediate threat to the global memory market, particularly for Korean giants, isn't going to be like a race-to-the-bottom price war on the open market.
Okay, then what is it?
The structural threat is Chinese enterprise customers abruptly diversifying their supply chains away from foreign dependencies.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, when domestic options like CXMT become viable and are heavily incentivized by the state, the massive internal procurement budget simply vanishes from the global ledger.
They're building an entire parallel hardware ecosystem that basically doesn't need to interact with the West. And looking at the briefing, this ecosystem doesn't stop at the server racks inside a data center. It extends all the way out into the telecom networks.
Right, we're seeing Chinese telecom giants pivoting to become native AI cloud providers. The telecommunications infrastructure is literally being repurposed.
Like at the WAIC forum, when China Telecom announced that their Zhurang platform is now managing over 100 EFLOP-S of computing power.
Yeah. They are integrating various domestic chips, adapting to the localized hardware constraints we just discussed, and serving native AI platforms directly through the telecom grid.
I want to translate that number for you, the listener, because 100 EFLOP-S is really hard to visualize. An EFLOP is a quintillion floating point operations per second, basically a billion calculations.
Massive.
100 EFLOP-S is roughly equivalent to millions of high-end laptops running at maximum capacity simultaneously. Having a telecom company manage that level of computing power is staggering.
And they're pairing it with massive network upgrades. China Unicom partnered with Huawei to launch a 5GA commercial uplink network in Beijing, featuring over 10,000 base stations with an average uplink speed of 397 megabits per second.
Now, in my daily life, I mostly care about download speed, right? Streaming movies, pulling up web pages. I only think about upload speed when I'm trying to send a massive video file. Why is this massive investment focused heavily on the uplink?
Because the consumer internet is designed for human consumption, which is almost entirely downloading. But the AI internet is designed for machine perception.
That makes sense.
When you envision the future of edge AI, you know, smart manufacturing facilities, fleets of autonomous vehicles, citywide industrial camera networks, these physical devices aren't downloading movies. They're generating massive continuous streams of high-definition environmental data out in the real world.
They have to send everything they're seeing and hearing back to the central brain to be analyzed. If you have a factory floor with dozens of 4K cameras monitoring a complex assembly line for micro defects, they are furiously trying to upload gigabytes of video every single second.
Right. And if the upload network lags, the AI in the data center has nothing to process.
Yeah.
The upload speed is the true physical bottleneck for real-world edge AI.
So by laying down a 10,000 base station 5GA uplink network, China is explicitly building the nervous system required for AI to step out of the isolated data center and interact with the chaotic physical world in real time.
Which naturally bridges us to the next massive phase detailed in the briefing, embodied AI.
Yes, putting this digital intelligence into the physical bodies of robots. If you have the open-weight models, the Huawei computing clusters, and the high-speed telecom nervous system, the inevitable next step is a physical robot that can leverage all of that to manipulate its environment.
And the commercial moves in this space are highly aggressive right now. On July 24th, a robotics company called Agibot initiated its Hong Kong IPO process.
Okay, but a tech company raising funds isn't inherently unique.
True, but within the context of the Chinese humanoid industry, an IPO is deployed as a strategic weapon for total market capture.
Break down the mechanics of that weapon for me. How does ringing a stock exchange bell translate to dominating the robotics industry?
Going public floods the company with immense liquidity. In a nascent hardware market, the company with the most cash can aggressively buy up the specialized supply chains.
Like the small factories making precision actuators or custom sensor manufacturers.
Yeah, exactly. They lock down the production lines through massive volume contracts, effectively starving their competitors of raw components while driving their own unit costs down to the floor. It's a race to achieve inescapable scale before anyone else can react.
Wow. And we saw the philosophy behind this push at WAIC. Fourier demonstrated their GR3 robot, but they notably weren't showing off a robot doing backflips or, like, dancing to music.
No, they were specifically targeting elder care, rehabilitation, and household assistance. The evaluation metric for the Chinese robotics sector has fundamentally matured.
The industry has moved entirely past viral tech demos.
Completely. The criteria defining success on the factory floor and in the boardroom are now real-world pass completion rates, insurance liability models, safety protocols, and the robot's ability to systematically collect and process environmental data.
It's the classic arc of a new technology. It starts with a flashy demo that goes viral, but then reality hits. We're actually at the point where deploying a robot to fold laundry or assist an elderly person is less about solving the mechanical engineering and much more about navigating data systems and insurance liabilities.
Because a robot that successfully folds clothes is great, but a robot that glitches and accidentally breaks a window or injures a person is a catastrophic legal nightmare.
Right. The mechanical engineering, the joints, the motors is rapidly becoming commoditized.
The true battleground is reliability and risk mitigation. And this shift carries massive implications for the listener's daily life and global market dynamics.
Why is that?
If these Chinese companies successfully use their IPO capital to corner the supply chain and rapidly drive down the unit cost of these reliable, task-oriented robots, we're going to witness a massive global penetration of cheap Chinese hardware into logistics, domestic manufacturing, and service sectors worldwide.
And having cheaper robots cleaning hospitals or sorting packages sounds great on the surface, but when you connect it back to the infrastructure we just discussed, it raises serious questions.
It introduces incredibly complex data privacy and security concerns. These robots are not just mechanical tools, they are roving sensor platforms.
Right. They're capturing highly detailed environmental data, uploading it through those high-speed 5GA telecom networks to be processed by models like Kimi K3 running on localized Huawei superclusters.
It creates a completely closed loop of data capture, transmission, and processing.
So let's step back and look at who is building that loop, because none of the open-weight software models, the memory chip capital surges, the telecom upgrades, or the robotics IPOs is happening organically in a vacuum.
Not at all. The briefing makes it abundantly clear this is being orchestrated from the top down. It serves as a masterclass in fusing aggressive domestic subsidies with targeted international diplomacy.
Yeah, looking at the policy landscape, on July 23rd, Beijing announced 10 distinct support measures specifically for smart agents. They aren't just offering tax breaks.
Right. They are providing 140 high-quality, state-approved data sets, up to 100 million RMB in direct project funding, and comprehensive support for physical terminals.
It's a fire hose of raw resources directed at a very specific target. It perfectly illustrates the Chinese policy mechanic. The central government, specifically the Cyberspace Administration of China, draws the broad boundaries and sets the rules.
And then the local governments, like Beijing in this instance, act as the accelerant, dumping massive funding, localized resources, and testing grounds on top of the industry to maximize development speed within those boundaries.
And the strategy extends far beyond their own borders. On that exact same day, July 23rd, the APEC digital and AI ministers adopted the Chengdu Declaration.
China is leveraging aggressive AI diplomacy. They aren't merely striving for technological self-reliance just to survive sanctions. They're actively working to embed their open-weight models, their telecom hardware, and their technical standards into the foundational infrastructure of emerging Asian countries.
When you look at the U.S. actively discussing how to put up digital walls and restrict AI access, China is essentially executing the exact opposite maneuver.
Completely opposite.
They're trying to export their entire AI infrastructure stack to their neighbors through treaties like the Chengdu Declaration. It feels incredibly similar to a modern digital version of the Belt and Road Initiative.
The AI Belt and Road is honestly the perfect conceptual framework for this. For China, artificial intelligence is no longer just a technology sector. It's a complete fusion of foreign diplomacy and internal industrial policy.
Because they're facing immense compounding pressure externally. Just days later, on July 27th, the Chinese Commerce Department sharply rebuked the ongoing U.S. reviews of sanctions.
They explicitly pointed out that the conflict has expanded far beyond restricting lithography machines for semiconductor manufacturing. The blockade now encompasses chip design architecture, model distillation restrictions, and broad limitations on overseas cloud access.
They are being systematically boxed in on the global stage. But based on everything in lawyer Kim Kung-jin's briefing, their response to being boxed in isn't to slow down.
No, they accelerate internally. They use open-weight software to bypass API restrictions. They mobilize state capital to build massive computing clusters to compensate for chip bans. And they use diplomatic declarations to secure new unregulated markets.
They are attempting to outpace the restrictions by building an ecosystem that is simply too large, too cheap, and too deeply integrated into the global supply chain to be cleanly amputated.
Pulling all of these threads together, we have to look at the ultimate takeaway for the global tech supply chain and for the companies operating within it. Lawyer Kim Kung-jin draws a very pointed, pragmatic conclusion in his commentary.
Which is?
The global business community has to stop analyzing Chinese AI solely through the lens of technical leaderboards. Obsessing over whether a Chinese large language model is 3% smarter or faster than a U.S. counterpart completely misses the overarching macro dynamic.
Right. The U.S. is mobilizing to block and contain. China is mobilizing to spread and integrate.
And as those two massive geopolitical tectonic plates grind against each other, any company caught in the middle, whether you're buying software, building hardware, or deploying robots, has to adapt immediately.
So what's the immediate priority for global executives and supply chain managers? It isn't debating theoretical AI performance metrics anymore.
The mandate is to establish incredibly strict, resilient legal and contract systems. Mm-hmm. If you operate anywhere near this space, you must meticulously map and document your entire supply chain.
You need the capability to track the exact origin and the underlying weights of the AI models you are deploying for every single customer.
Exactly. You must rigorously audit your telecom, edge computing, and data center hardware for dual use compliance.
Because if a company ignores this structural shift and just assumes it's business as usual,
they're going to be crushed by the sheer weight of the bureaucracy surrounding this tech war. Failing to implement these tracking and auditing systems will result in devastating losses of time and contract negotiations, endless bureaucratic delays at customs checkpoints, and the very real threat of being entirely locked out of lucrative public procurement processes.
Wow. Companies must architect a legal and operational framework capable of withstanding intense, hostile regulatory scrutiny from both sides of the Pacific simultaneously.
That is the new reality of the market.
We've covered massive ground today. We started by unpacking why giving away the blueprints to a massive software model is a geopolitical weapon. We broke down the engineering reality of linking 1,024 chips to bypass hardware bans, explored how high-speed upload networks are the missing link for physical robots, and finally mapped out how all of this is wrapped in aggressive state subsidies and international diplomacy.
You now have the full map of how China's AI ecosystem actually operates as a single unified machine.
And the entire briefing serves as a stark reminder that advanced technology does not exist in a vacuum. It is deeply, inextricably bound to the realities of geopolitics, domestic capital markets, and grand national strategy.
Very well said.
Which leaves us with a fascinating and perhaps slightly unsettling thought to chew on as we wrap up. We spent the last two decades viewing the internet and software as this inherently borderless frontier. But as AI infrastructure, physical hardware clusters and the models themselves become the primary tools of statecraft and the new national borders, how long until the software running on the phone in your pocket or the smart robotic appliance sitting in your living room has to explicitly declare and verify its digital citizenship before it's even allowed to turn on?
Given the speed at which this ecosystem is being built, that is a reality we're all going to have to navigate much sooner than we think.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow Daily AI News from Seoul on Apple Podcasts.